Go ahead. Go ahead, bitch. Yeah, Danny.
What? What am I doing? What's happening?
I was talking to Nick, but then he said, oh, yeah, Danny.
What are we...
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Anime Summit Podcast. I'm Nick, and with me I have Sam.
Heyo!
And Danny.
Hello, everyone.
And this is episode 139, if I recall correctly. We're talking about the final, most recent Studio Ghibli films, The Tale of Princess Kaguya and When Marnie Was There. And there is also a future film in the works, but... we'll get to that later. So this is like the final part of our Ghibli series where we talk about three Ghibli movies in an episode and we discuss them and say, oh, what's good, what's bad, where does it fit in our list of the Ghibli pantheon? You know, and now we're at the ultimate moment. So
can
this
I just
should
say
be pretty
something?
Cool.
Can I just say something? I'm a little sad that it's over. Gather myself. Give me 10 seconds. No, I'm just kidding. No, but it's cool, though, right? We set out, like, this is actually, like, behind the scenes and shit. Like, this was Nick's idea to, like, be like, hey, let's watch every Ghibli.
It's a very unique idea. No one's ever thought of it.
Everybody's like, let's watch every Ghibli film and tell people if we like it or not. It's like, okay.
How novel.
Yeah. But like, you know what? It made me watch all the ones I had yet to see still. So, I mean, that's legit.
Yeah, and rewatching some of the other ones was good too, because I liked them more. A lot of them. Maybe all of them.
Oh, same. Same.
So, yeah, I mean,
I think I have
Studio
like
Ghibli.
Definitely have a new love for Only Yesterday. For sure. But yeah. So,
yeah, and
oh, go ahead.
Another note is like we at the end of the episode we're gonna like talk about our final, you know, rankings of the films, like which ones we like the most, where we put them, and we're not including Lupin: The Castle of Cagliostro or Nausicaä because those weren't part of Studio Ghibli. They were Miyazaki, but not technically Ghibli. So we will talk about those in a future episode, and maybe we'll try to like slot them in. Like posthumously, but I just wanted to use that word in a sentence.
Posthumously.
But yeah, so like we're gonna have 20 films, and we're gonna rank them at the end. But now we're talking about Kaguya and When Marnie Was There, and then also we're gonna give some shout outs and takeaways to the documentary The Kingdom of Dreams and Madness, which was I believe that was filmed in like 2012.
Yeah,
2013. Yeah, like around the 2011, 2012, before
they were covering
the Wind Rises.
Yep.
and Princess Kaguya.
Yep.
Except they didn't. Oh, well, we'll get to it. They didn't really cover Kaguya very much in that one, but it's like
it was very little. But
yeah.
that was because of Esau his delaying. Of like not finishing the film, but he ended up finishing the film anyway.
And then it was also I think it was more, also a little bit more of an exploration of where Miyazaki came from and all that stuff.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And how he is going forward and all that.
Miyazaki, Suzuki, all three of them.
Because when this documentary was made, they made a documentary because it was thought that The Wind Rises was supposed to be Miyazaki's last film.
Retirement film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
and then fucking Your Name had to come out, and now he's like, God damn it.
Gotta well, now I gotta show these kids who's boss. But, anyway.
As he should.
Right. Grandpa
Totoro
Miyazaki.
Totoro 2, Tokyo Drift.
Totoro 2, Tokyo Drift.
That's what it's gonna be.
Pompoko 2, even bigger sacks. Okay. Oh, shut up, Sam. You're stupid. Okay. I'm going to get into the news, right? I'm going to do the news again because Nick is still... Okay, everyone, you know what? I'm sick of y'all's shit. Leave Nick alone, okay?
Whoa.
His voice is still a little pacho-y, so I'm going to do the news. So just everyone stop yelling at Nick, except Danny. You keep yelling at him. Everyone else,
shut up, Nick.
Everyone else, though, just calm down.
Shut up, Nick.
He's like, Nick. Your yelling makes me stronger.
Shut up, Nick.
All right. Everyone Danny the hell down, okay? Just relax. So, do it again. Why wasn't Space Dandy the next Cowboy Bebop? It's an old-ass article, is it? No, it's not. It was the 20th anniversary of Otakon. Whoa, really?
Holy crap.
Holy shit. But, this is kind of interesting. It kind of talks about how Space Dandy was announced at Otakon and stuff like that, and people were asking him about Cowboy Bebop and shit, and he's just kind of like, I ain't about that life. But I still haven't seen Space Dandy. I've only seen the first 4 or 5 episodes. So
it's pretty, I haven't finished it either. It's pretty hilarious though, but I definitely wouldn't compare, like, I wouldn't really compare it to, like, Cowboy Bebop. Like, I don't think it's the next Cowboy Bebop because it's, like, it's completely different. It's, like, the complete opposite of Cowboy Bebop. Mm. Like, it's more colorful
right.
than Cowboy
it's
Bebop.
A little more
Cowboy
silly.
Bebop. Cowboy Bebop is, like, dark and ominous. A little bit.
It's got a
and
certain
does...
environment to it, and then Space Dandy is just kind of all over the place.
Yeah. Well, the but difference it, but in is this... the era they came out.
Right. So in this article, it kind of emphasizes on like how after its initial run, it kind of left fandom consciousness, like almost right after. People had higher expectations for it because, you know, of who was making it and stuff. You know,
of course, I mean. It's gonna happen, but, like, regardless, he wanted to make something different that wasn't Cowboy Bebop, and he achieved that. You know? It technically doesn't have to be the next Cowboy Bebop.
So, recently, it returned to the 2:30 a.m. slot on Toonami. For those of you who don't know, back in the day, Saturday night Adult Swim was just anime, and Toonami was, like, afternoon, evening, primetime anime that was edited and censored. Now Toonami is just Saturday night Adult Swim, which is awesome. But I guess it kind of revived it a little bit, which is kind of cool, right? I mean, this is an anime that I feel like everyone should watch, as Nick has said in the past, especially to me, because I haven't seen the whole thing yet. But
oh, yeah. It's one of the best anime to come out in the last 10 years, I would say.
Right, so that's an interesting article. I'd almost like to visit this as a topic about.
Yeah, this is kind of its own topic too.
Yeah,
it's like a big ass article. Goes into Rick and Morty later on. Just like it's kind of like, why wasn't Space Dandy a hit? And it goes
right.
You know, it explains it because it came out in the era of like social media and millions of anime are out, and there's no such thing as monoculture anymore. So like. There's, you know, everyone has their little niche and they don't know about everything that comes out. Because back in the day, you know, there was only a small handful of entertainment things that came out every year. And you'd be like, oh, well, I saw Jurassic Park. Did you? Yes, because fucking everybody saw it. So, like, but
right.
Now, you know, we have thousands of things and you're just bombarded. So that's part of it. And then there's other parts, too, that they get into
right.
in there.
So we should explore that later. But anyway, I'll make sure that Nick puts the link in the show notes. Dragon Ball Super movie, it got put up on MAL. That's going to be sick. It's going to talk about Saiyans. I'm not going to say much else because there's not really much else about it. But I'm excited for that. It's going to be dope because we know it's going to end soon and whatever. Somebody posted on Anime News Network to the Answer Man, is it now cool to be an anime fan because celebrities like anime? Because recently Kim Kardashian, we all know this happened, posted a picture of 02 from Darling in the Franxx saying like hair goals or something like that. Or,
yeah, it's like her inspiration or something.
Yeah, hair inspiration. Michael B. Jordan also came out as being a Dragon Ball fan or whatever. And even
to be
going
fair, everybody's a Dragon Ball fan.
I know, why not, right? Even as going as far as saying that his armor was kind of based on Vegeta's armor, his armor in Black Panther, that is. So Anonymous asked, well, recently this happened and this happened. Kim Kardashian and Michael B. Jordan came out as like an anime. I grew up a freak for liking anime. Really don't know how I feel about this. Okay, first of all, being an anime fan is not closed off to anyone. Anyone can be an anime fan. It's not anyone's fault but the people who made fun of you that you like. You know what I mean? Like, those people are dicks, okay? Just, I mean, how do you know that Michael B. Jordan didn't grow up getting made fun of, you know, for like an anime or any of these other people? They probably all got made fun of too. You know what I'm saying? Jamie Lee Curtis, Robin Williams, Samuel L. Jackson, Christian Bale, Tobey Maguire, Hayley Williams from Paramore cosplayed Blood the Last Vampire on stage during Halloween. And then you also have the behind the scenes people like Guillermo del Toro, Quentin Tarantino, Darren Aronofsky.
Oh, yeah, creator. And then James Cameron, right?
James Cameron.
He based Interstellar off of Gunbuster.
And he's doing loosely. Alita.
Yeah, and he's doing Battle Angel Alita.
Yeah. The creator of the fucking Simpsons and Futurama goes to Anime Expo. So, I know this guy on this Anime News Network, the Answer Man, already answered you, but I'm going to give you my answer. And my answer is, I'm sorry if you got made fun of for like an anime. I got made fun of it too. Nick got made fun of it, I'm sure. But you can't get mad at famous people for like an anime. Like, that's just kind of stupid.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And some people are calling them fake fans, you know, trying to pander. But,
okay, well,
you know, that's just, you know, that's kind of BS. Like, just, yeah, if they like it, let them like it. I mean, shit. Don't
right.
Don't be a fucking, you know,
right.
Fedora, neckbeard gatekeeper, you know?
Right.
You gotta let people in.
Kanye West, did like a little inspiration in one of his music videos for Akira. Like,
it was Stronger. Yeah.
Kanye like was wearing a hospital gown and stuff like that. And that was like one of the scenes with Kaneda in the hallway and shit. So,
yeah.
Like,
yeah. When he wakes up. Yep.
You know, like these celebrities are human as well. Like,
right.
And
they just have a lot of money.
they have a lot of money and they you know, they can do anything they want. Me personally, I really think Kim Kardashian is a fake and she likes to be like in the now and like what's in and everything. And since she is married to Kanye West, I'm pretty sure Kanye showed her, you know, Akira and like has like, you know, been watching some anime, but like I really don't believe anything that comes out of her mouth anyway, because she like posts a lot of like false information on like where she gets her inspiration from.
She kind of does, yeah. It's kind of weird. But then again, too, who's also to say that she wasn't cruising Twitter and saw somebody retweet a picture of Zero Two?
Yeah,
and she just thought, that looks cool.
Yeah,
you know,
that's my guess.
But
yeah,
I'm guessing that she doesn't like necessarily watch every show, but what she probably does is like look at the art.
Right.
She probably goes to she's one of those snobby Sakugaboru people who goes onto those forums and it's like, oh, look at the Sakuga.
So I'll end it with this, right? I would be lying if I said I didn't want to watch an anime with Kim Kardashian. That's all I'm saying. Do I
Keijo, dude? There you go.
Keijo, we can watch Keijo. Be like, all look, right, they made an anime about you. Anyway.
Let's move on.
this is kind of interesting. Legend of the VHS fan subs tracking down Miami Mike. So there's this lore about this guy named Miami Mike who was part of a Dragon Ball fan sub, and they always would put, back in the day, the way they put text on VHS tapes, they added text on there, was they had this little computer device that plugged into a VHS recording machine, and you had to type it out. And somebody on a fan sub put, Miami, this is brought to you by Sentinasar Video. No thanks to Miami Mike. I remember what you did to me at Dragon Con. And it was like at the credit, at the end credits of a Dragon Ball or Dragon Ball Z episode. You know, back in the day, if you wanted to watch something ahead of time, you know, they didn't have Crunchyroll and shit. And if you wanted to watch it before it came to the States, which would take a long time sometimes, you had to order it from some guy who ran a fan sub website, and he would process it on a record it on a VHS for you and send it to you, and you'd pay him like $50. You know what I mean? So like, it's crazy. That's how my cousin Mario like watched anime. When he was, you know, younger, But he explained that to me one time, and that was crazy. So anyway, I'm going to post that. Make sure Nick posts that link in the article. This is super interesting. The lore of Miami Mike, if he's a real person. What did he do to this guy at Dragon Con? It's kind of funny. That's it for the news, though.
That's another one of its own topics. Like,
yeah, that's actually really funny.
We need one of the old takus to go deep on it, because we didn't really participate in the
I will contact my cousin Mario.
You gotta get like Mike Toole and all the people from. I mean, the thing is, if you want to know more about this, honestly, just check out the Anime World Order podcast. Like, they have a lot of experience with that. So, and I think they have some episodes
from it. Because they lived it.
Yeah.
They lived it. They grew up.
So, like, this is just a little taste of that.
Right. So, because by the time I was like getting into anime when I was a kid, at Suncoast Video, you could get the Japanese versions of anime. They would cost less than the dubbed version, which is weird, but yeah. So anyway, let's go on to waifu of the week. Did we pick one? No.
Shit. Marnie or Kaguya?
Marnie.
Oh no! It has to be Kaguya, because that's her story.
That makes sense.
She's the princess. She's trying to get married. Or she's not trying
to.
No,
she's not trying to get married. What are you talking about? Get your facts straight, man.
That's because none of them brought her a sick Asuka figurine. Oh!
I'm going to give Husbando the hour to Grandpa Miyazaki-san, because he's been in anime, right? Like, he probably has. Like, he's been animated into a thing. Probably.
No, he was in the documentary.
There you go. Miyazaki-san is a fucking, I think he's like 70 something, right? Shit.
We could throw a fastball and give it to Hideaki Anno.
Oh yeah, because he was in the winter. He was in the documentary too, yeah. But yeah, oh yeah, he's 77. Holy shit. Okay, anyway.
He's Joseph Joestar.
So there you go. Waifu of the week is Kaguya, because hello. And then husband of the hour is Hayao Miyazaki, because hello. He's a Japanese silver fox. That's all you need to know.
He is a silver fox.
He really is, actually, really handsome. anyway, so here's the main
dude,
topic.
His hair is glorious.
Dude, he's a silver fox. He's like
his hair and his beard are like spot on, man.
Yeah, like he's so like, I don't know, he may make some weird like kind of comments like, oh, anime sucks now, or something weird like that, but he's a humble guy for the most part, I think. Anyway, on to the main topic, Ghibli Part 7. Last one. Here we go. Let's go out with a bang, 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 bang.
Are you done?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I apologize. Just go ahead. The Tale of Princess Kaguya is the in the order we do things here. This came out in 2013. It was directed by Isao Takahata. It was written by Isao Takahata and Riko Sakaguchi. Produced by Nishimura. Music again by the wonderful Joe Hisaishi.
The legend.
Legend. Sure.
And it's based off of an old Japanese story called The Tale of the Bamboo Cutter.
He cut the bamboo out of time.
And it's one of the oldest, apparently it's one of the oldest Japanese prose narratives, so that's pretty cool.
Yes.
According
to
Wikipedia.
Yes. According to my uncle who read on Wikipedia. No, this is the Tale of the Bamboo Cutter is a 10th century Japanese fictional prose narrative. So like what we call here like American tall tales, like Paul Bunyan and shit like that. The oldest manuscripts date back to the 1500s, or yeah, 1600s, Edo period, around that shit. But yeah, The Tale of Princess Kaguya was an adaptation of that. is based on the folk tale of the bamboo cutter. It was Takahata's fifth and final film for Studio Ghibli, since he did My Neighbor the Yamadas. And
so
it came out 2013.
We should list his films really quick.
Yeah, he did Takahata. He did Grave of the Fireflies.
Yep.
only that yesterday.
That was released in conjunction with Totoro, and then Kaguya was released in conjunction with The Wind Rises.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He also did Only Yesterday, and then he did and when I say did, I mean he wrote and directed these.
Yeah.
So he also did Pompoko, and then My Neighbors the Yamadas, and then he hadn't really done anything up until The Tale of Princess Kaguya. So there you go. So he's done five. But he's awesome. I think he's awesome. I think he's
Great. All of his movies are really good, especially, I mean, the Yamadas is less popular, but all of them are worth watching. So, and sure. Pompoko. Wait, sure. Did he do the Yamadas?
He did.
Okay.
And he did Only Yesterday. And then he did Only Yesterday and Pompoko. So, that's pretty good.
He does love his 2 hour marks on his movies.
Shit, right? Jesus.
Exactly. when you think it's over, it's not.
But the dude is 82 years old. He's been a long time collaborative partner with Miyazaki.
Miyazaki-senpai.
He's also his mentor.
Right, for a long time.
Because the two of them worked together at Taui Animation.
Yeah, Takahata.
Yeah,
like
that's where
start
Takahata
Miyazaki's career.
Yeah, that's where Takahata-san met Miyazaki-san and Suzuki-san. So, and then they formed what is Studio Ghibli today.
Yeah.
Save it for the Kingdom of Dreams and Madness discussion, Danny.
Podcast.
Oh, my God. That's what we're talking about right now.
The Tale of Prince Kaguya. Who wants to kind of quickly summarize this one? Really, you're kind of just also summarizing the tale of the bamboo cutter as well. So,
yeah, they're very similar. So basically, the idea is that it's like based on this myth where this old couple finds a miniature girl growing inside of a bamboo shoot, and they believe that she's, you know, a divine god, and then they decide
a
to
blessing,
raise her.
Not a divine god, a blessing from the heavens.
Well, divine presence. Yeah, it's what's the word? Kami? No, they don't think she's a kami. Anyway, they think she's a presence. So yes, they decide to raise her as their own, and she grows up really fast, like super duper fast, like Ponyo style, where she's just like before your eyes, she's like getting bigger. And she makes friends with the kids in their little forest village where they're basically harvesting bamboo and using it to create different products like bowls and stuff like that. And they call her the bamboo girl. What is the name they called her?
Little bamboo.
Yep. So I watched this in the Japanese subtitle because it's literally in Japan and like. It's like a Japanese story specifically.
Right.
I don't know how the dub is. Danny, did you check that out at all?
I did. It's all, I mean,
it doesn't make sense to watch the dub.
Well, the reason why, so my thing when it comes to like Japanese settings, sometimes I can't understand what the meaning behind it. So what I do is I usually, if I decide to watch it subbed, I'll watch it subbed. And then if I don't get it, like if I have like this weird feeling about it at the end, I usually see if there's a dub and I watch the dub so I can understand it a little bit more.
Yeah, assuming they didn't change the whole meaning of everything.
Yeah, sometimes I mean, like I didn't, this time I didn't watch the sub for this one. Because, like, I have to watch. I've been busy, so I didn't really have the time to sit and watch it twice. So, I just went straight to the dub because it's easier for me that way.
Who did the voices?
The dub.
It was Chloe Grace Moretz did Princess Kaguya.
Yeah.
Darren Criss, he was from Glee. There's also Lucy Liu, George Segal, James Marsden, Oliver.
Oh, Chloe Moretz. She's the one with the gift.
She plays
meme.
Hit Girl.
She's the one with the meme where she's like making the surprise face.
And Bo Bridges and John Cho. Well, she plays Hit Girl in Kick-Ass. There you go. But anyway, Danny, go ahead. Sorry.
But I mean, it's definitely the dub. Even like since it was licensed by Walt Disney and stuff, I have to say this voice cast was like the weakest.
It was G-Kids, I believe.
Out of everything.
No, it was Disney.
No, it was Disney.
Oh, why is this licensor says G-Kids? Okay. I'm looking at the wrong page.
G-Kids is like what they do. They produce all the Ghibli films in theaters in selected months.
Oh, you know what? I'm confusing G Kids with 4Kids. All right, never mind.
God.
So yeah, I would just kind of look at it like a Disney movie then, because I guess a lot of Disney movies take place in, like, you know, Aladdin is in, you know, Arabia somewhere, so they don't speak English there. So
it's a fictional Arab place.
It's fine. Yeah, I'm overthinking it.
What I got out of this film, I got it. It reminded me of Thumbelina.
It's Agrabah, yeah. By the way.
And we should say the rest of the general plot. So she's raised by this old couple. She turns out to be a beautiful girl, and then they save up enough gold to bring her to the capital.
No.
The guy like
the bamboo
finds
cutter.
Gold.
The bamboo cutter. Found gold while he was doing his job, and then all of a sudden, like, these gorgeous silk robes shot out, and he's all like, this is a sign from the heavens. They want us, you know, to give Kaguya, like, the best life she could ever have.
Well, yeah, that's...
I want to raise her to be a real princess.
So he uses the gold to help him with that. So, like, basically they take her to try to become a nobility, and they go to, it's not the capital, it's like a big city. I don't remember the name of it.
They don't really like say what.
They go to a city.
They say the capital.
Because the emperor shows up, and it looks like he traveled there. So I don't think it's the same place. But anyway, so they go to where the nobility are, where some of them are, and they try to raise her as a princess, and then eventually she becomes a desired suitor, or not a suitor, a desired, like, wife or bride. So, like, a bunch of male nobility attempt to gain her affection, and they have to, like, she sends them off on quests to find these rare or fictional items because she doesn't want to marry them. And then they go and do that, and meanwhile, she's just trying to live her life. She's not trying to be, you know, cooped up as a princess. And at the end of the movie, she has to go back to the moon folk. She's like part of, she's actually, it's kind of like Land of the Lustrous. Like when at the end of that, when it showed up, you know, Danny,
way
like
to
the,
give away. Yeah, I know.
The cloud shows up and there's like Buddha.
Yeah,
and like,
when I watched that, I was all like, those damn moon people, they ruined everything.
And, so, yeah, she has to go back, and then once they put the cloak on her, she forgets all of what happened.
Oh, man, why did you have to give away the ending? You gave away, like, half the ending.
It's an old story. It's thousands of years old.
Yeah, but you just gave it away. Now people, like, you just spoiled it for people.
That's fine. It's fine. It's an old story.
oh, my God.
This is a Ghibli movie. You can't spoil that. The whole point...
You just spoiled it right now,
though. The whole point
of
this movie is the Sakuga. It's the crazy, like, you know, rough drawings where she's like running in the moonlight and all that, you know, all the robes are flying off and stuff. And, you know, it's got the good Joe Hisaishi soundtrack and, you know, it's the story itself is not, I mean, it's not as what's the word? It's kind of like a fundamental type story. It's nothing that's going to blow your mind. You know, it's pretty basic.
It's very subtle. It's not like in your face. The artwork, the animation and everything is like absolutely amazing. Like, I thought it was incredible that Takahata-san decided to go this route.
Well, all of his movies look like this pretty much.
Well, not Grave of the Fireflies.
That's the only one. But then the other, but like Only Yesterday,
and Only
has like
Yesterday
the same style.
Not like that.
It's
not
pretty much the same
really.
Style because they use, they like, at least okay, in parts of it, and the Yamadas as well. They like kind of don't draw the backgrounds. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
It's kind of really like faded Fog of War type thing, and they focus on the characters moving, you know, the movement. So,
when I watched it, I didn't feel like I was watching a movie. I felt, to me, it felt like I was reading a storybook.
Yeah, it's like a storybook. The characters are kind of archetypes. They're less rounded than some of the more contemporary stories we get nowadays.
Right.
Like, you know, compare this to Spirited Away, and it's not even close. Right.
Well,
because
they're two different stories.
Well, because of the source material, like
from two different people.
Yeah, I'm just saying compare the characterization, like how dynamic each character is. The characters here are pretty one note, and that's fine because it's an old story. You don't have multifaceted characters other than Kaguya and sort of the boy that she meets in the beginning. It's very like a folktale. Sam, you get what I'm saying, right?
Yeah, it's based off the, you know, the bamboo cutters.
They're
not
trying to like blow your mind with that. It's pretty straightforward.
No, I know that. Like, but I just feel that Spirited Away isn't really a good comparison.
Okay, well, whatever. Pick another movie then.
Pick another movie.
Shit.
Oh,
okay,
God.
Kiki's Delivery Service. There you go. All right.
That also doesn't seem right.
Yeah.
No, Kiki's Delivery Service has plenty of well-rounded characters. Like Kiki, she learns and grows. She's a real. She
like,
feels like a real person, et cetera, et cetera.
I don't.
You know what I mean?
To be quite honest, like okay, yeah, I see where you're going because you know Kaguya is a strong female character, and usually Studio Ghibli films, especially with Miyazaki-san, like he has a lot of strong female roles. So, like, I get that perspective. I get that comparison. But the film in general and overall, I can't compare it to, like, Spirited Away or Kiki's Delivery Service.
No, I'm not saying it's the same story.
What I compare it to is, like, Thumbelina. Because.
Yeah,
because
it's like a fairy tale. It's more of a fairy tale than like a real story, if that makes sense. It has like these defined arc, you know, these archetype characters. It's a pretty linear style plot. It's not gonna surprise anybody. That's what
I'm saying.
You don't have these characters, you know, acting like real rounded people. They're
right.
just there to teach you a lesson, kind of like Aesop's Fables a little bit. And that's what it is. It's, you know,
like
it's
Paul Bunyan.
It's basically like the idea of Princess Kaguya. She learns to cherish the humans as, you know, as a moon folk. She didn't know that. She came down and learned that, you know, even despite all the suffering and pain and you know, that she might have experienced,
was feeling
there
yeah,
was the highs made up for the lows, and it was
mm-hmm.
worth, you know, living in that world. That's what she was trying to say
right.
at the end. And then I think at the end it hinted that she looked back at the earth and like remembered that
she
liked it. I don't think she specifically knew, but I think she looked back and had a feeling, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Damn, you wasted that ending as well. You spoiled it for everyone again.
I think we do spoil Ghibli episodes, don't we?
It's like 2,000-year-old story. Or like a 1,000.
Yeah, but like,
then again, we forgot to say spoiler alert at the beginning.
Yeah, and but also some people aren't like researching. Oh, I should look into the Tale of the Bamboo Cutter because I want to know about this story. No, people don't do that.
Well, we can put a spoiler alert. That's fine. I mean, like all I'm saying is, you don't watch this for the plot. That's not what the, you know, it's not about. The
I
twist.
Watched it for the plot.
No, you.
What
watch
are you talking
it,
about?
You watch it for the. The spectacle, like the production, the animation, the soundtrack.
I watched it for the plot, and I watched it for the animation. That's what I look into films, like any sort of film.
Hashtag fuck plot.
Well, that's your logic. That's that, you know. My logic is completely different compared to yours. So.
But I think what Nick is trying to say is, like, okay, so the point of, like, okay, I'm going to say Paul Bunyan again, okay? So whatever. But the point of the Paul Bunyan story, the plot wasn't that important as much as like, okay, so, like, his character was made to be, like, this ridiculous strong, he was abnormally huge, whatever.
Right.
The point of the story of Paul Bunyan was to show how parts of America were made. It wasn't about him and the fucking ox. Mm-hmm. Him and the ox were just, they were the main characters of the story, but they were just there to show.
Yeah.
To what, yeah. So
and
I think
like,
what Nick
Kaguya
is trying
is like
to say
maybe
is,
one level above that, you know, she's got some more going on, but it's, you know, she's not on the level of Kiki. She's not on the level of, I can't remember her name. The girl from Spirited Away, starts with a C.
Chihiro.
There we go.
Her
it's not on that level where she feels like a real person. All of these characters feel fictional, and that's the point. They're not supposed to be somebody that you can relate to perfectly. Like, that's not what the movie is. And that's fine. I'm not saying like, terrible. Like, that's, you know, they're using the source material.
I suppose. But I think you can relate to Kaguya in a, like,
well, she's the most
bit,
relatable.
You know?
Yeah, she's the most relatable. But then all the other ones are just, you know, they have one thing going on.
Right.
Like right, so then why are you mad, Nick?
Okay, which prince would you marry?
Neither.
There's five of them, if I remember.
Yeah, there was five of them. One of them died.
The hot one.
The hot one.
the smooth talking Casanova. He could pluck my flower. I pick him too because he was like the least ugliest. You know what I'm saying?
Same.
Like, they're all going to cheat on you, but you know, you might as well.
Well, they all freaking had wives.
Actually, it wasn't even cheating in that day. They just had concubines. So their culture was like polygamous or whatever. So I don't know. At least for the rich people. Yeah, so, I mean, there's not like a ton. I don't know. Like, I kind of explained it. There's not like a ton to delve into. I mean, there is a lot, but like, what kind of questions did you guys have? What do you think this was saying at the end? Sam, you haven't spoken up a lot.
You know what? I'm going to be real. Kind of didn't really enjoy this one. I wasn't really in it for, I don't know, I just wasn't.
Well, yeah, because it's a fairy tale.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably why. I guess that's why it was boring to me. I didn't really take anything away from it. The only thing I took away from it was it kind of shed light on kind of the old world of things, which is kind of cool. You know, like arranged marriages or things like that or whatever.
Yeah.
But one thing I think that it kind of shed light on was growing up, which I think a lot of people don't really talk about, because she grew up quick, obviously, right? Physically,
yeah,
and she kind of had to mentally, in a sense.
Yeah.
And she kind of grew up really quickly only knowing what she knew, and that was where she was when the people who found her, the people who raised her, you know? So, like, I think I kind of take away that. Other than that, I was really just in it for, like, how beautiful it looked. I don't know.
Yeah, it had, like, that painterly, watercolory background, you know, like brush strokes and stuff.
Yeah, I fucking loved it.
It looked
awesome.
I
loved that. Like, I would love to be able to paint, like, that style one day, hopefully. But anyway, that's
I mean,
kind of
the film was nominated for best animated feature at the Oscars.
Justified.
And it also received like 20 nominations worldwide.
Oh yeah.
So
shit ton.
Oh, that's cuz that's cuz Disney picked it up. Disney didn't pick up the new ones that came out a year ago, so that's why those didn't get nominated. Cuz Disney is like they own Hollywood, so
well,
yeah, pretty much.
But regardless, it received a lot of nominations aside from the Oscars. But to me, this I feel like this film was a really good send-off for Takahata-san. Like, I really feel like that he put his heart, his blood, sweat, and tears into this film.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, I know, Sam, like, you didn't enjoy it, but out of the Takahata-san films that I've seen, like, this one, I have to say, like, was one of my favorites. Even for it being, like, 2 hours long. Because, you know, like, every time I thought it was over, it wasn't. It just kept on going. So.
Oh, who messed with our spreadsheet? You guys changed all the colors.
I did not do that.
Oh, my God. Somebody deleted. All right, getting salty. Oh, you know what? It's be okay. Nope, I'm wrong. My computer. I'm using F Flux or whatever the app that changes the color of your screen.
Wow.
So my yellow looks white.
I'm just gonna leave this in because it's funny.
Like, you fucked with my tears.
So really? Do we want to? We're gonna wait till the end, obviously, like we do with every Ghibli episode. We're gonna wait till the end before we say what we liked the most. And in this case, we're going to be ranking all of them. So shut up, Pacho.
Oh, my God.
This whole episode is dedicated to yelling at Pacho.
To yelling at Pacho.
But, yeah, no, it got a lot of awards. I'm trying to look up to see what beat it in animation. Oh, Big Hero 6.
Yeah.
Disney film.
Okay.
Because sure. Disney and Pixar always fucking beat.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, I loved Big Hero 6. I fucking love that film. But
oh no, I'm sure it's awesome. Actually, it might even be better. But, well, that's like 3D animation. That's like some Pixar shit right there.
It's a Disney film that's not Pixar, so it's kind of confusing.
It looks similar, is what I'm saying.
Because people get that confused all the time. But anyway,
is it DreamWorks or Lucas Art? I don't know. Whatever. Don't know.
No, it's Disney. Okay,
that's the marshmallow one.
You're the Baymax. His name is Baymax. And they're in San Francisco. It's California.
Which that is also based on a manga.
Is that based on Neo Yokio?
God, no.
All right,
stop
moving
it.
On.
All right, moving on.
So the next movie we're talking about is When Marnie Was There.
She was there one time.
This one aired in 2014, the year after Kaguya and the Wind Rises. Directed by Yoshiaki Nishimura, or I'm sorry, I said that wrong. That was a producer.
Hiramasa
Yonabayashi. There we go. I said the producer on accident, but Nishimura, I think he was in the Kingdom of Dreams of Madness. That's what I was mixing up.
Yes.
He was like the overly handsome guy. Did you guys notice that in that documentary?
Yeah.
Was that mm-hmm. him or somebody else?
Nope, that was him.
No, that was him.
Yeah, look at that guy. He's like a model.
He's
the overly he's handsome guy.
Wait, look at that. He's tall, dark, and handsome.
He's tall, dark, and handsome. God damn it.
All right. Well, anyway. So, When Marnie Was There. So this is the Yonabayashi movie.
This is the quote-unquote last film of Studio Ghibli.
Now, Yonabayashi, this guy looks goofy. This guy looks like a director. Look at that.
This guy looks goofy.
That's how you can trust him.
He does look a little goofy. He's like, eh. He studied at the Kanazawa College of Art. There you go. What are you mad for?
No, but that's how you know he's a good director.
Right. Okay. That's how you know he does stuff. He also.
So does anybody want to take this summary? Or oh, sorry. Go ahead, Sam. Just
no. I was just saying. But anyway. You know what? Fun fact. Actually, yeah, I can take this one because here's why. Because when we first started this podcast, actually. This episode's not on YouTube, but I'm sure if you scroll down iTunes long enough, you could probably find it somewhere, unless it circulates out. I don't know. But it's one of the first things I reviewed on this show, on this podcast with Nick, was When Marnie Was There. Because we watched it as it was available to watch for us, because I don't think it came out in 2014, but we weren't able to watch it until
2015. We recorded our first impressions of this in like 2015 or 2016.
2015 or 20, yeah.
It was one of those.
This was also, just to note, this film featured the final work for Studio Ghibli animator Makiko Futaki, who died in 2016. And I think we said that on this show too, but she's best known for her contributions to Totoro, Mononoke, and Spirited Away. And she also did some other stuff for Studio Gainax, and then did When Marnie Was There, and did Castle of Cagliostro. So there you go.
Oh, dude, that has some good animation. Oh, my God.
Futaki Futaki. I think we did mention her when she died on this podcast, but Rest in Paradise, Homie. I can't wait to
talk about Cagliostro, man. That was awesome animation.
Legit. Legit. No, for real. It was really good. So anyway, Nick said all the credentials already. When Marnie Was There is about a girl named Anna Sasaki, who she's kind of a shy 12-year-old girl, and she lives with her foster parents in Sapporo. One time, or she during school, she gets an asthma attack, and then her foster parents discuss to her doctor, saying, you know, she's kind of introverted, she's kind of shy, you know, blah, 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 blah. Let's send her with my relatives in Yoriko, which is like a rural seaside town. It's like the fucking boonies, okay? Like, it's old school. And she draws, you know, she's like introverted, she's shy and shit. And one day, just kind of walking around, seeing shit, she discovers this salt marsh, and there's like this beautiful fucking mansion on this salt marsh. And it's kind of creepy too, like it's kind of ominous or whatever. And then she sees a blonde girl like on top of the marsh, and then she starts dreaming of that blonde girl. From here on, the film just gets kind of like very paranormal. Like when she's in the mansion, she's seeing what she thinks is actually happening, but it's not. It's like they're having like a party. A dinner party, and there's a bunch of rich people, the wine glasses and everything. It's actually what she's seeing is actually something that happened already.
It was a memory. Like,
it was a memory, yeah, just running through the mansion. And then Marnie is the blonde girl that she sees, and she starts confiding in Anna about all of the trauma and abuse she suffered in that mansion, and how her two maids abused her when her parents would fucking leave her alone, like, constantly. It's almost kind of sad. It's almost kind of, like, a tragic...
It kind of has a happy ending, but it's a tragedy. So, this film...
I wouldn't call it a tragedy.
Well, it has a lot of sad moments. It's not a happy...
It's more, like, melancholic and, like, bittersweet, because, like...
Yeah.
Are we going to spoil this?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think we already kind of...
Okay, sorry, I had to leave the room for a second. Holy crap, my voice is sounding different right now. Okay, so tell me if I interpreted this wrong. Marnie was her grandmother, right?
Yes.
Okay. Just making sure I didn't fuck that up.
No, you are correct.
That's not really a tragedy. That's just her, like... remembering how her grandmother loved her, and she kind of...
Yeah, but she didn't know that Marnie was her grandmother, because...
Yeah.
Her parents died when Anna was a very young age, so... And then her grandmother
yes.
died.
That's like the tragedy, but it doesn't happen in the movie. So
yes, it does.
Her parents dying in the movie? I don't think that happened.
It was explained.
It was explained, but it wasn't like.
But
it wasn't
a
prequel.
There wasn't
a
scene. There wasn't a scene of it. But it was mentioned in it.
It's dealing with the
aftermath. There was a flashback.
Yeah.
So it was mentioned in
the
movie. The
aftermath, like trying to find her life. So like, I think it's kind of good that she was able to connect with her grandma like that. like spiritually, you know, at the end or whatever, or during the whole movie, really. And so, like, I think that's a positive thing.
It is a positive thing because, you know, Anna, she didn't know, I don't want to say she was having, like, a midlife crisis because she wasn't.
She's like 14 or something, right?
She was like 12.
Yeah.
But like she didn't really, you know, she didn't feel like she belonged, you know? And here's the thing about this movie. Like, this movie holds a very special place in my heart, because when I saw this movie, I actually saw it in theaters. Nice. In New York City. So, and when, sorry, I might get a little emotional.
No, dude, this movie, if you want to take the
sound,
no.
Did you already
here?
Explain, like, when me and you watched it, we're like, oh, yeah, we'll just knock this one out quick right before the podcast.
And then
we both showed up, we're like, audience, man.
Yeah, yeah, so, like,
oh, dude.
Go ahead. If
this
you,
is, like, so, one of the most teary Ghibli movies.
It is. So you go ahead and take it. Go ahead.
This film, reminds me of my grandmother. And for those of you who don't know, my grandmother passed away, like 6 years ago. It was all of a sudden. She had cancer. So
of course, cancer.
And that was, yeah, like she had breast cancer, and like, she got rid of it, and then like 3 years later it came back and it killed her. So I get very emotional when it comes to this film, and like when I rewatched it, I like cried my eyes out again, because I can somewhat relate to Anna, because Anna is an only child, and I just felt like I was Anna when I was watching this film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like she was trying to like find herself, and you know, like where does she belong? She felt like, you know, she didn't belong anywhere, and like when she went to the countryside to like get away, you know, that's how I feel right now. That's how I felt when I was like feeling that I wasn't belonging anywhere when I was in Jersey. That's why I moved to South Carolina, to find out, like, to just figure out myself.
Right.
So this movie, like, it has a very it holds a very special place to my heart.
Because, kind of worked its way in there in your little, yeah.
Yeah.
Your little
yeah.
part there. So, I remember talking to you about when we were talking about having you on this podcast, you were also about to move. So, like, for those of you who don't, like, don't try to get too personal, sorry. But Dani moved first before she started here. So, but
yeah,
I remember.
Yeah, because we didn't want any complications.
Right.
Like that.
And I remember you struggling a little bit. So
I'm still struggling, dude. Like,
yeah,
are you kidding me? Like, I'm still struggling.
Right.
I have a lot of demons in me, and sometimes I don't really like to talk about them. I usually keep them to myself because
save it for the demons podcast.
I know.
Annie.
Shut up. No, but like all jokes aside, like I like sometimes like the way that I think. When I'm like deep in thought, I usually don't talk about it because I know how to handle it. So, and when my grandmother passed away, that was like I was in a bad place.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was, those were the dark times.
Mm-hmm.
So. And it, like, still hits me, and like, this fucking movie just, like, hits it home. And that's why I love it, you know? Like, I do get sad every time this movie is mentioned, but it's in a good way, because mm-hmm. it makes me remind me of my grandmother. Not that, like, I'm not thinking about my grandmother every day. Like, I think about her 24/7, so, but, like, this movie really hits it home for me, and I love it so much.
Sure.
Yeah, I didn't even have any of those same experiences, but I still felt like really, you know,
I think it was connection
to the character here too.
Yeah.
So
I think for real,
it was really well directed.
I think on the real talk though too, like when me and Nick talked about it on the show, it was that reveal, dude. It was like that explanation at the end, like at the last part of the movie.
It was kind of hinted at, I think.
Sure.
You knew that Marnie wasn't like necessarily.
Yeah, you knew that Marnie wasn't a real person.
She was going to be something supernatural, basically.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. You knew from the beginning that Marnie was an illusion. She was a person in Anna's head. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But when the people who were living, who moved into the Marsh house and what was refurbishing it, the girl found Marnie's diary, and she spotted Anna in the trench and told her, and you know, was shouting Marnie and all that kind of stuff. So like, I kind of enjoyed that little girl, like, you know, wondering, like, who was Marnie? And, like, she thought that Anna was Marnie. And Anna was all like, no, that's not me. That's not my diary.
Right.
So.
Right.
It also has, like, a sense of, like, well, who is Marnie?
Right.
You know? And at the end, when they confronted, what was her name? Misaka, the elderly woman who was
painter?
Painting the Yeah. Like I got like a sense of relief when like she was talking about Marnie's life and like how she was when she was an adult and stuff like that. So yeah, I love this movie.
Yeah, so I mean, I think a lot of it too is also like. Like, yeah, you know, like, we knew that Marnie was not, like, she was something that she was just seeing. But I think it was also, like, why is the main character... The whole thing was, why was the main character seeing her? You know what I mean?
Right,
and then the reveal at the end just made it, like... You thought it was something
so much
like
more
that.
Sense.
Yeah, you thought it was something like that, but not as epic as what it was actually it was.
Right.
So it was,
right.
So
yeah.
It was kind of cool.
It was really a good connection. Like, it was actually somebody, like, related to her. You know, it wasn't just a random imaginary friend.
No, yeah, and they didn't try, they did it without, it didn't seem like they were trying to tug at your heartstrings, you know what I mean? Because sometimes you can watch like a television show or a movie,
it's
like you're
melodramatic, you know? Yep.
Yeah, you're just trying to throw the feels in that one, you know, whatever. They kind of just did it, and then you just kind of felt that way, which is how it's supposed to be, that's how it works, right?
Yeah, because they did a good job directing it.
For sure.
I keep forgetting his name, Honobayashi's, or...
Yonobiyashi. Hinamasu Yonobiyashi is his name. So, how do you want to go on from here, guys? Obviously, we thought that one was a great one, right? So, that's it, right?
Well,
game over.
Documentary.
We did. We did watch the documentary.
So, this isn't going to be in our rankings. We're just going to briefly... What did we learn? We don't have to summarize it. Let's just say, like, what were our takeaways?
Yeah, we already said at the beginning what it follows and whatever. So,
I didn't give my final impressions of Marnie.
You go ahead.
Did you guys both did it right?
Yeah, we're good. We're good. Okay. I think people.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this one too. Like I would put it in the top, you know, the top section of the Ghibli movies. I don't know exactly where we made our little tiers in like 5 minutes. So, this one had a really big emotional pull to it. So like I teared up at the no tear Nick.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
I didn't tear
the
up.
The legend of no tear Nick was a lie.
I was cutting onions. I just so happened.
Yeah, right.
I just so happened to
be
cutting them.
The legend of no tear Nick was a lie, and I helped cover it up.
I needed
up.
That flavor to my food, so I was making onions. So yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah, I agree with everything Danny said pretty much. Like the idea of, you know, a person dealing with loneliness, and, you know, she was really didn't have any didn't feel like she had any friends or any family, or like her family didn't really feel real to her either, because it was like foster parents, and she felt like they didn't love her and all that, when in reality they did. They were just
they didn't know
how to express it, really.
They didn't know
they were ashamed of taking the government money too.
Yeah,
because in Japan that's like part of their, well, I guess in humans in general don't like the idea of taking handouts. People want to be able to be autonomous and fend for themselves.
Some people.
Well, it's complicated.
Not,
but
not all.
Most
not all.
Most people.
If someone, if some, if yeah. so, it, like if someone went and said, "Oh, here, have $1,000." You know. Oh, okay.
Well, no, right. But if someone's like, "Here, have $1,000 every month or whatever," and then okay, well, anyway, that's not save it
People
for save it for the Universal Basic Income podcast, Nick. All right. Well, yeah, like, so her family didn't know how to express it to her, and then she goes, you know, to the summer place, and she like gets in a fight with some girls, and she's just like lonely and everything. So like that just like really, you know, it felt pretty real, like the way they handled that. And you know, I like the song at the end. You know, I like how they played that. I like how she was just driving away and she saw Marnie one last time. You know, ugh. So yeah, great movie. I probably ranked it too low on my tier list. I'll have to remedy that.
I ranked it a little lower, and it's not because.
Dude, Ghibli has so many fucking good movies. Like,
yeah, right. Yeah,
it's ridiculous.
Like it's because other stuff. I enjoyed other stuff more. Obviously, Danny would have ranked it higher because of the personal stuff she had with it, and she's obviously not going to fault us for that. But
yeah, I mean, I wouldn't fault anybody for putting this at number one if they wanted. You know, this is a good movie.
Right.
You know,
honestly, yeah. So no, we want to. I'd only fault you for putting Tales from Ursi like anywhere higher than
yeah, and Arrietty. Those two were like not the best. And honestly, for me, we'll get to okay. Let's get to the tiers later.
Well, Arrietty was directed by. The same guy. I can't. I'm going to butcher his name. Someone say his name.
Hiromasa Yonebayashi.
Yeah. He directed Arrietty. That was his debut.
What was the source
film.
Material?
Arrietty? So. The source material was The Borrowers. It was an old, old folktale. The Borrowers. The little people. They borrow stuff.
Oh, yeah.
It's an old,
okay.
old English
so that's why I didn't like
by
that
Mary
much.
Norton.
That's why that one felt like a fairy tale,
I mean,
too.
It had
more heart to it. Okay, yeah.
I enjoyed that one a lot because it just reminded me of the John Goodman, The Borrowers.
Right, which I mentioned on that episode, and then Nick was like, "Shut up, Sam, stupid." Nobody knows what that is.
You know what, Sam? You know what I got to say about John Goodman, Borrowers? Mark it zero. Your foot was over the line, Donnie.
Ah, oh, shut up.
Not Donnie. Other guy. Whatever.
Okay.
Yeah, so...
But anyway, The Kingdom of Dreams and Madness is a really enjoyable documentary. I seriously recommend everyone watch it.
Really even if you
good.
Haven't
this
seen any Ghibli movies, you should watch
it.
This
is my second time watching it. I watched it the first time when it was on Netflix for a short time.
It was my second time watching it as well. And I think it's really cool not only to follow the two films it was following, which is Kaguya and the Wind Rises, but like just to see everything. Because you know, these movies have been
lives.
These movies have been coming out for a long time. And then finally they make a documentary of just showing where the magic
is
happening.
Infinite, yeah.
It's more of like a snapshot.
Steel.
It's not really a Ghibli documentary. It's like a Wind Rises snapshot,
I would say.
It's
like a period documentary. Yeah, it shows
almost entirely
time.
About the Wind Rises.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say it's
part.
About Studio Ghibli as a whole because you could go way deeper than that. Yep. Like you'd have to make a multi-movie documentary for that. But like,
and yeah, 100%. And as we mentioned too in the Wind Rises, or not the Wind Rises episode, but the Ghibli episode where we talked about the Wind Rises, as we mentioned in that one, it does show where Miyazaki-san is talking about his struggle drawing the planes.
Yeah,
because
the zero plane. I forgot what it was called.
He was having confliction because he was drawing something that was used for war. But in that sense, he was okay with drawing them because that then related to the character,
right.
The main character, because
he
was designing planes for war, and he was like,
I like
know.
The scene where Miyazaki and Anno are... talking about otakus a little bit and like they're like, "Oh, I'm not an otaku," and then you see him like zooming the plane around.
yeah
it's like he totally is.
Yeah, she was all like, "Oh, so are you an otaku?" He's all like, "No,
my
favorite
I'm not an otaku."
My favorite scenes are these two, and you guys, I know you guys are gonna be like, "Wow, Simon, you're fucking a hoe," but anyway,
is it the cats?
Shut up, dude. So
is it him poking the cat and saying, "I wish I didn't have a schedule"?
Yeah, it's like he's outside.
Oh my god. Please oh my god. Don't die.
I'm dying. Stop.
He's outside. They have this nice like terrace area at the top. And fucking Catface Johnson, I forget the cat's name. But it's a fucking, she's this furry fucking white cat. And
black and white cat. She's yeah. got black spots on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And there's a little table. Like,
yeah, anyway.
She's like the anti-Pacho, right? Because Pacho's more
dude,
black
she,
and white.
No, wait, hold on. Before you continue your story, Sam, she literally, like their cat, she literally just walked out of a Miyazaki film. Like that's how I picture, like that's how I picture the cats that Miyazaki-san draws.
Oh, for sure.
Like I... That's it. Like she's like she just walked out of a Studio Ghibli film. That's
yeah, she's like, I'm out, I'm done. But yeah, anyway, there's this little continue. Table, and he's out there having a cigarette, and he's like, "Look at her, look at this fun cat right now." And then he looks at her, and she looks up at him, and he's like,
"Like pokes him."
Yeah,
he pokes her,
and then she looks up at him, and he's like, "You have no schedule." And then my other favorite scene, other than all the awesome information and stuff too. Is seeing when they're cooking for everybody, because these guys are working all fucking day. Like,
well, Miyazaki works exactly 10 hours a day, 6 days a week.
Yeah,
he has like a precise schedule.
Yeah.
Yeah, he starts at like what 11?
He goes
11 a.m.
Yeah.
11 a.m. on the dot, and he leaves. He leaves at 9 p.m. on the dot. Like he doesn't go over.
Which I think is good because. It lets you have some balance, you know? I think that's important.
Yeah.
Right. He even shows you his house, which is crazy. But anyway, they're all cooking for each other, and he puts 14 packs of ramen in this big pot, and then puts instant ramen, and then puts all the powder, and then puts sautéed mushrooms and some others, and a bunch of scrambled eggs. And he mixes it, and everybody just goes... He brings it to the center, and everybody just fucking... Everyone just fucking going ham. He grabs some random, like, scratch paper from, like, someone's bin and then puts it on the table and then puts the pot on top of it. And he's just like, here you go. Eat, eat, eat.
He's so blunt.
That's some real shit.
And then he's like, the guy's pouring in the eggs and he's doing it too fast. And he's like, slow down. Like, slowly. Like, it's too quick. But yeah, it's a really good documentary.
I think... like my favorite part was when they were trying to figure out the lead, like who
all the
voice,
voicing the lead.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was so funny when they were all like, maybe we should get like a non actor, and they mentioned I forgot the
Hideaki Anno.
Hideaki Anno.
Yeah.
Well, he's not an actor. He's a director, not an actor.
Yeah,
he's Evangelion.
He was all and Miyazaki-san was all like, nah. Not Anno. No, we can't. And then, like, it just kept, like, going in his head, like, oh, yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll call him later and stuff, so.
And then it cuts to, like, him funny. In the car, and he calls him.
Yeah, yeah. That was freaking awesome.
I like how they
this documentary all day.
I like how they playfully bullied him, and they're like, oh, Anno, you can go take a break now. And he's like, oh, no, I know what's going to happen if I do that.
Oh, yeah, no, they go out, I forgot the voice director or whatever, I don't know what her position was, but like
some
she's
kind
all
of
like, oh, they want you up,
something,
like
yeah.
do you can go upstairs if you want. He's all like, no, I'll stay down here because they'll just bully me. And she's like, oh, okay, I'll get you some coffee. And like when she went upstairs, like they were like praising Anno and everything like that. And then like she went downstairs and it cut like, oh, you know, they want you to go upstairs. They're praising you. And he's all like, no, it's a trap. Like,
yeah.
the first thing if I go upstairs, they'll start picking on me.
I think it's cool that like Anno is Miyazaki's protege. Well, sort of to some extent because
they worked together.
On Nausicaa, I believe.
Yes. Yep.
And, you know, he helped him get his jump start. And then, you know, now he's helping out Miyazaki a little bit. And then, you know, Takahata is Miyazaki's senior. So
mentor, yeah.
You got that little dynamic going on. I think it's like, you know, in real life for everybody, like everybody should have something like that going on. Like you should have your peers, your pupils, and then also your mentors. Like everybody should have that. If you don't have
right.
that, then you're missing something. So, for Sam, sure. You are my... You're my senpai, Sam. And then, Danny, you're my kohai. There we go. All right. And I have no peers.
Pacho can be your peer.
Oh, yeah, Paco.
Paco.
Fucking Pacho's Tachos.
He always bullies me.
Or oh, Aqua man. Titties. Aqua Titties can be your peer.
Oh, yeah, Aqua Titties. Same. Same. Oh my god. Y'all should join the Discord. It's fucking funny. Anyway.
Oh, yeah. It's in the show notes. So, yep.
So, anyway. I mean, it's a fun documentary.
Yeah. They had some really insightful comments and quotes. Miyazaki was talking about his character. Because basically, Miyazaki doesn't, and I think Takahata to some extent, they don't plan ahead their storyboards. Like, they don't have, they kind of just do it as they go along. That's like most Ghibli movies, or maybe all of them. And he, I don't think it's all of them, because some of them are based off of, like, When Marnie Was There was based off a novel, right? So that one's different. But the Miyazaki-specific ones, the originals, are, he's just going by the seat of his pants. It's basically exactly like Shirobako, except they don't chain him to the basement. But
Howl's Moving Castle was based.
Oh, that was based off something as well.
On an English novel.
But the storyboards themselves are... what I'm saying is, like, the storyboards he makes up as he goes along. And he was talking about, like, I like how he goes to the animators and tells them, like, you know, how to draw, like, a specific scene. And, like, every tiny little detail has to be perfect. And he's like, oh, no, they can't bow like this, because back then they bowed, you know, in this precise way or whatever.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he says, like, his quote is, like, what drives animation is the will of the characters. You don't depict fate, you depict will, even if fate exists. And that's what I think a couple of the Ghibli movies lacked. Like, Kaguya, it had some of that, but it didn't have enough, like, will of the characters, if that made sense. The best Ghibli movies have, like, the characters are, you know, they're fighting for something, and they're, like, taking real agency and everything. And Kaguya, while it's also a great movie, it didn't quite have that, you know, but it had... I don't want to, like, bash on Kaguya. It sounds like I don't like it, but I did like it. But
the thing is, with that comparison that you just said, you also have to remember that Takahata-san isn't Miyazaki-san. So
yeah, well, yeah, they're different, and he was also adapting different thing. Yeah,
yeah, like Takahata-san adapts way differently than Miyazaki-san. So that and I think that what was a little bit of a lackluster in this documentary, like, you did see a couple of, like, information about Isao Takahata, but you didn't really see his development and his madness on how he was making.
That's why this is the Wind Rises documentary. It's not really any more or less than that.
Yeah.
And then I also liked how, like, Miyazaki was talking about how the NHK and, like, the conservatism, you know, in their country was kind of pushing the freedoms down, or their creative freedom. They were getting a little bit restricted. Like, in The Wind Rises, he couldn't touch on certain topics of the war because it wouldn't have been aired
mm-hmm.
in Japan. Yeah. They have, like, a real problem with, you know, denying a lot of, you know, of their past, like, war, you know, crimes or whatever they are. So that was interesting that he was saying.
Well, that's why he kind of, like, changed the ending, too, because, you know, he described, when he finished his storyboard, if I remember correctly, it wasn't anti-war. But then Miyazaki-san... changed the ending, and the ending became anti-war or something like that. I don't remember what it was.
Yeah.
But, like, they were discussing, Miyazaki-san and Suzuki-san were talking, like, Suzuki was going through the storyboard because Miyazaki-san changed the ending. He's all like, I like this ending better. Hence the final ending that we got when the movie was released.
Now that I'm thinking about it, we really should have talked about this in conjunction with The Wind Rises, because that would have made more sense. But that's fine, because, like, the basic takeaways from the movie are, like, you know, Miyazaki has his methods for making movies.
Right.
And
Takahata-san
likes,
has his ways.
Yeah. It was really a Miyazaki themed movie though. So we didn't learn a lot about Takahata in this one. But like as far as Miyazaki, he likes to leave a little bit of like life's mysteries in his movie. He likes to leave, you know, some dialogue unsaid, you know, which I like. I don't enjoy when characters just spell everything out for you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he has kind of this like understanding of like what, you know, of like social cues and everything, which I enjoy. So he had a good quote about that. I don't have it off the top of my head, but something to the effect of like, they're asking him like why he got married. And he's like, well, I had to, I asked her, I couldn't back out. It was just something that had to be done, you know? And it's like, that's kind of part of his movies. Like some things just have to be done or whatever. So, you know, I think that's a good takeaway from it. You know, also, this movie was pretty well directed, the documentary. It was kind of, I like the Japanese style of directing where they shoot scenery. You know, they start off a scene just like shooting some power lines or whatever. there's a word for that. I forgot, but it is. But anyway, like America does it a little differently. It's more like overly dramatic. And this one is more like low key and scenic. And, you know, the very ending where he's just kind of like walking toward the camera. It just ends.
Mm-hmm. I saw this movie in theaters as well. That was a great experience.
So should we go through our? I don't know how much time we got. Like we kind of.
Yeah, we got enough time. Let's do a good job, Sam. All right, we're an hour and 15.
We don't.
Right now.
We don't. But okay, we're not. Supposed
we're
to
at
go
an
over.
Hour and 15 right now.
Yeah, not supposed to go over. Okay, but anyway, it's fine. Go ahead. Go ahead, bitch.
Yeah, Danny.
What am I doing? What's happening? What
I was talking
doing?
To Nick, but then he said, oh, yeah, Danny.
What are we doing?
No, Sam, you didn't tell us what we're doing.
Sure, I'm just going to say it, right? Just my how I have it in order.
So we're listing our Ghibli favorite movies in order.
Yeah, I'm just going to say it. I'm just going to say mine. So 1 to 20, okay? 20 being the most pacho.
Oh, build a little suspense. Count upward.
Oh, true that. So from the most pacho and then up. Okay. Number 20, Tales of Mercy. Just because. Yeah, that's all I'm going to say. Arrietty. The Cat Returns. Whisper of the Heart. And kind of boring. Ponyo. From Up on a Poppy Hill. My Neighbor the Yamadas. The Wind Rises. Tale of Princess Kaguya. Porco Rosso. When Marnie Was There. So now When Marnie Was There is number 10. Going up from there is Castle in the Sky. Grave of the Fireflies. Only Yesterday. Howl's Moving Castle. And my top 5, starting from 5, Spirited Away. My Neighbor Totoro. Pompoko. Princess Mononoke, and Kiki's Delivery Service.
So fight me. You had him upside down. What are you doing? I'm just
what do
kidding.
You mean? Oh, shut up. You shut up. I'm not the one who put Tales from Mercy at number 5, okay?
Nobody did.
I know. I'm just trying to make you look bad. What about you, Danny? You go ahead.
You put it as rank Z.
I know, because it sucks.
I didn't think it was that bad, but yeah, okay. That's fine. It wasn't that good, though, so.
Right. I think Danny's still futzing with her, so you go ahead, Nick.
Okay. Starting so the reason I want to do this up. In tiers is because I feel like there's different, like, clumps, right? And I don't necessarily, you know, like, putting something 1 or 7 or whatever, it's like, what is it? Who cares about the number for me? I just, what's in what bucket? So the bottom bucket, we got Tales from Earthsea. Then the second bottom bucket, we got Arrietty, Cat Returns, Whisper of the Heart. I feel like all of these bottom ones are just, they've been done better by other movies in Ghibli. You know, like Whisper of the Heart is done better with Only Yesterday. So,
agree.
Yeah, there we go. And then for me, I had Pompoko pretty low because I don't like the raccoon face Johnsons as much as Sam.
Fucking bullshit, dude. Full of shit.
And then I have My Neighbor's the Yamadas. That one's actually kind of funny. I sort of enjoy that one. And then From Up on Poppy Hill, just like a reasonable movie. Porco Rosso had some great animation, but I felt like it was a little bit lacking in, like, you know, direction or, like, drive.
I feel like it didn't have enough volume.
It had, a few really great scenes where he's, like, flying above the clouds and everything. But anyway. Right. So, and then I had The Tale of Princess Kaguya at number 12, When Marnie Was There, which maybe I should put that higher now that I'm thinking about it. But I don't know what to put it above because, like, everything above it is awesome. So
Put it above Ponyo, definitely.
No, the thing about Ponyo is this, I think, has the best animation of any Ghibli movie.
It's gorgeous.
It's like a masterpiece of animation. The thing about it is, like, you can show a Ponyo to anybody. It's like a family movie. So that's why I'm putting slightly above When Marnie, because, like, that one's a little more, you know, niche. I don't know. Maybe that's, you know, take it or leave it. Then the last in my C tier is Castle in the Sky. C for Castle.
No.
The oldest Ghibli movie. I think that one is, like, if you want to start someone on a Ghibli movie, just be like, hey, watch Castle in the Sky. Can't go wrong with that.
That's a good one.
It's good. It's not necessarily the best Ghibli movie, but it's, like, really good. You can't go wrong. Then in the B tier, we have Howl's Moving Castle, The Wind Rises, Only Yesterday, and Kiki's Delivery Service. With these, they're, like, just below the very top. They're some of my favorites.
They're pretty close.
Sorry?
They're pretty close is what you're saying. Like,
yeah, they're close, but they're not quite masterpieces. Like, Only Yesterday, if it was as good as the ending, like, the last, I would say, 15 minutes of the movie are, like, a masterpiece. But it does have some slow parts in the middle, and perhaps it was a tiny bit too long. And, it, you know, if it was as good as the ending, it would be the number one Ghibli movie, because I think it had maybe the best ending. And, you know, the others, Howl's Moving Castle, like, best soundtrack, Wind Rises, just all around really good, Kiki's Delivery Service, all around really good. Anyway, the top tier for me is Grave of the Fireflies, Spirited Away, My Neighbor Totoro, and Princess Mononoke. Those are at the top. And, you know, those are, like, the obvious picks. They're the best produced. They look awesome. They're most iconic with Totoro. Spirited Away has some of the best animation. Mononoke has some of the best everything. Grave of the Fireflies.
So the way Nick broke down his buckets or whatever, like A, B, C, D, for the most part, there's a few exceptions. My bucket was similar. Obviously, I had Pompoko higher.
You can rank it however you want. I mean,
no. I'm just saying, like, in terms of, like, how many A's and B's and C's you had.
Oh, yeah. Mine were a little, like, I had, like, four in everything, and then the bottom was, like, three and a one.
Yeah, because Tales from Earthsea is just...
Because Earthsea was just not as... It just didn't have the heart of the Ghibli movie, you know?
Yeah, it's because it's Gorō Miyazaki, didn't he? Sucks.
Well, come on. Don't hate on Miyazaki-san's son. That's not nice.
Yeah. Nah. I don't know. Like, my personal favorite maybe is Totoro. But I put Mononoke above it, Princess Mononoke. But if I rewatched them, I'd probably reorder a little bit. But that's just the gist of it. Those are my little clumps, my groups.
So, what about you, Danny's?
Well, since I came aboard of this podcast way later than when you guys started, the Ghibli, like, the episode Ghibli series, I didn't watch all of them. Like, I didn't watch all 20. I have to say, I didn't watch four Ghibli films.
Yep.
So I'm only rating the ones that I've seen.
Yep. So 16 and up is where you're going. Yeah. Yep.
So,
just leave them in the ranks they're at right now, Danny.
Shut the fuck up.
To make some mad.
Shut up.
Pompoko below Earthsea.
Well, I'll see once I get the chance to watch.
Oh,
Pompoko
is a fine movie. I'm just, I don't hate
it
at all.
Just an ass.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so I'm gonna go to my E bucket, and those two are Tales from Earthsea and The Secret World of Arrietty. My D bucket is From Up on Poppy Hill and Poco Rosso. The C bucket is Grave of the Fireflies, Castle in the Sky, Only Yesterday.
That's a bold move, putting Grave of the Fireflies so low.
Okay, so here's my thing with Grave of the Fireflies. It's just too fucking sad, and like I can't.
Yeah, yeah, we said that too. Yeah,
that's like I still have it in the C, like in my C list. But like, it just the ones that I've watched, it really wasn't my favorite because it was just too fucking sad, and like that Grave of the Fireflies is the type of film that I can't like watch frequently. Like if someone hasn't seen it and they would want to watch it, I would definitely watch it again with them. But other than that, this is the type of film that I wouldn't decide on my own, like out of the blue, like, oh, I'm going to watch Grave of the Fireflies. Like,
right.
No, yeah. Like that's the type of film that So, but yeah.
It's too heavy.
It's so heavy. It's so real, but it's so heavy. Though. Yeah. No, like I'm not like hating on it. Like it's a great film. So, like that's one of Takahata-san's greatest films that he's ever made.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, most people say that's his best one.
It is his best one, and I firmly believe it. So, but anyway, so my B list is The Tale of Princess Kaguya, The Wind Rises, Ponyo, and Kiki's Delivery Service. And then lastly, my A tier is My Neighbor Totoro, Princess Mononoke, When Marnie Was There, Spirited Away, and my number one is Howl's Moving Castle.
Can't even come for you on that one. Howl's Moving Castle, number one.
Number one soundtrack.
That's my, like, I can watch that film over and over and over again.
I just want to marry Howl.
That one is a good dub, too. Yeah, the dub is phenomenal.
It's fantastic. And I just love... I love showing people this film.
Oh, yeah.
And I want to get a tattoo of Howl on
He's my Ghibli Husbando.
He is my... Straight up.
Straight the fuck
I really wanted when this film came out, I really wanted to see it in theaters, but unfortunately I didn't get the chance to. So hopefully one day when
I saw this one in theaters when it came out.
Yeah, I really wanted to, but I didn't.
You know when I saw Howl's Moving Castle the first time? I saw it probably like 3 months after they started putting red boxes out there. In front of like Walgreens and shit, when red boxes were just becoming huge, is when I watched it because I red boxed it. Fucking love red box. Anyway,
I think when it finally came out on DVD, I was all like, I need to get this.
I need to buy this.
I need to buy this. So
now I feel like I ranked it too low. God damn it!
I love this film. Put it above The Wind Rises. I have a movie poster. I have the Japanese movie poster.
Nice one, mate.
So
does anyone have any final thoughts or conclusions then? Anything you want to say before we end this turkey?
Well, I want
to. I'm gonna cry now.
I want to just quickly plug that. And everyone should probably already know this, but Miyazaki's coming out of retirement and he is working on a new film called How Do You Live?
Yep.
So there's not a lot of detail about the film, like on what it's going to be about. I mean, it's dedicated to like in the article that I posted. It's the movie is based on the 1937 book of the same name written. I'm going to butcher that name. I'm just going to say his last name, Yoshino. So, and the story follows a 15-year-old boy and his uncle who moved to a new neighborhood as the kid deals with spiritual growth, bullying, poverty, education, work, courage, and how to live as a human being. This film, and I quote, from what Suzuki-san revealed in a press conference, Miyazaki is making the new film for his grandson. It's his way of saying grandpa is moving on to the next world, but he's leaving behind this film. So pretty much Miyazaki-san is dedicating this film to his grandson. And the goal of to release this film is 2020 or 2021.
For sure. So. For sure.
Right on.
And a lot of people thought, like, when Miyazaki-san came out of retirement and it was announced that he was coming out of retirement, people thought that he was going to do a feature film of his short film about that caterpillar. Boro the caterpillar.
Boruto?
Yeah, in the Studio Ghibli Museum. Yeah, Boro the caterpillar, yeah.
So, but that's not.
Oh, but it's going to be something different. Okay.
It's something completely
that's good,
different.
Actually. Yeah. So. I don't like caterpillars, so.
Well, know. Because everyone thought that he was going to release that as a
yeah.
As a thing, but yeah.
We already have A Bug's Life, the pinnacle of bug-based movies.
That's true.
So, yeah, that's my plug.
I just got one thing to say before Nick takes us out of here. It was Danny's birthday last week, and I totally forgot to say shit. It was her birthday the day after we recorded, so happy belated birthday. Y'all already said it on Discord, so thank you for that. I love all you
thank
for that.
You.
Happy
thanks
birthday,
everyone.
Danny. She's like,
and, Danny,
she's like,
your dentures arrived in the mail.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah,
I'm so old.
We play bridge on Tuesdays.
What?
We built those gates like there was no tomorrow.
Oh my god. Okay, Cowboy Bebop.
Also tomorrow, I have the day off from work, thank God, because it's Trisha's birthday. So I want to dedicate
Well,
this.
Remember, so wait, what's today? Today's Wednesday.
So you guys when you guys listen to it,
today's Tuesday.
Tuesday.
For you, today is Wednesday.
It's yeah, because it's 12:30 now.
Yeah, yeah. But
time zones, not even once.
So not even once. So for when you guys listen to it, it'll her birthday will have been yesterday, but
it will have been only yesterday. If you will,
she stays so damn quiet when I'm sitting here recording and yelling at Danny and yelling at Nick and Coca and Mac, and. Sometimes she just even just goes. She puts up with me for having her because she doesn't want to be in a different room. You know, she wants to be up here with me, and that's just like, fuck, God, I love you, I love you. So happy birthday, I love you. You're my favorite lesbian and my favorite panda bear in my bear stable, bitch. Anyway, Nick, please take us out of here because I have to go to the bathroom.
All right, all our contact info is on the bottom. I'm not gonna list it off. Please rate us on iTunes.
I'm not gonna listen.
Fuck
stupid.
It, dude.
If you leave us
a
review on iTunes,
I'm gonna pitch you guys a new way to end the show. After the show, we might be changing a couple of things around in the future. Maybe. I gotta run it by everybody. But anyway,
if it's Nick's idea,
I just want the endings to be more. I want the endings to be more epic. I want to go out with a bang. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, so do it then.
I don't have anything planned for that though. I need like a good, I need like a good soundbite. Be like, bam. Ghibli.
Oh my
dude, Studio
God.
Ghibli, one of the best. If you haven't seen them, check them out. Literally watch them in any order. I would suggest starting with Castle in the Sky if you haven't seen anything yet. That's my personal, you know, starter pack right there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just go down the list. I mean, honestly, yeah, they're all pretty much worth watching, except I would say the bottom four, you could take them or leave them. So, anyway, dude, a couple of masterpieces in there.
Some also show them to people who aren't into anime because they'll like them
yeah,
too.
Yeah, you don't have to like anime. You can just be like, hey, let's watch this movie because like
right.
It's that good. So the good thing is like, you know, some of the new movies now like Your Name, Silent Voice, I keep calling it Place Further Than the Universe. That's the TV show. In This Corner of the World. God, it's like the same name.
In the Corner?
Like those new movies are bringing up this, you know, resurgence of more anime movies, which I love. And like, you know, once you get into Ghibli movies, then you're like, oh, shit, what other anime movies are there? Oh, well, we got Redline, we got Angel's Egg, we got, you know, all this stuff. So
Angel's
it
Egg.
Opens. Dude, that's a masterpiece song. What are you talking about? 10 out of 10.
It is. It's great. Yoshi Takamano. Anyway.
But like, oh, yeah. So Ghibli, though, is like basically you can't go wrong.
For sure.
The bottom four.
You really can't. Like, all these films that we ranked and everything, like, our personal likes and dislikes and stuff, but all of the 20 Ghibli films and, like, some of the non-Ghibli films that Miyazaki and Takahata-san directed and everything, like, they're all great.
Yeah.
They all have their own, like, perks of the movie, and, you know, all of them are not the same. Like, all of them
right.
are super different.
Right.
So, and
there's
that's
some
why
similarities
they can be enjoyable.
In a couple of them. That's why
there
I'm
are some similarities. Like, for Miyazaki-san, like, majority of all his female roles are very strong.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, there's
yeah.
like
aside
a lot of nature.
From, yeah, a lot of nature. Yeah, yeah. You know, aside from The Wind Rises, because the main character in The Wind Rises isn't a female, it's Hiro. So, but aside from that, majority of all of Miyazaki-san's leads are females, and they have a strong presence to them.
Yep. Yep.
Oh, yeah.
So,
and I would say, you know, if you haven't seen any Ghibli, then you have to watch them. Like,
then you're living under a rock, and you need to get off
it's like,
under that
you know,
rock and, like, watch some shit.
You have to watch at least half a dozen Ghibli movies before you die. You know, that's what I'm going to say. If you don't watch, you know, so, 5-10 Ghibli movies of the best ones, then
you got to watch
what
the
are you
important
doing?
Ones.
What are you doing?
The important ones are a must.
Yeah, I would say, like, the top 10 roughly are must watch, maybe the top 12. Like, anything C tier
yeah.
or above for me. Plus,
we could
yeah,
we could go on in any order how to watch
yeah,
it,
whatever.
Like, but,
yeah,
but anyway,
yeah.
yeah
this
like,
is some of the
just,
best anime has to offer, so definitely
right.
watch them. They're great to show people. Ghibli's the best. Great. Good job. That's the show. All right.